to be happy. In every life we have some trouble, but when you worry you make it.
Hi, this is Gail Moskowitz and you're listening to Mental Health Matters. It's the first week in November. It's a beautiful, clear, crisp, cool day here in Richmond, Virginia, and I appreciate you listening to the show. Mental Health Matters is a show dedicated to exploring all sorts of topics that are related to mental health. I talk about situations that affect our mental health, explore options to strengthen your mental health, describe various emotional disorders that disable so many individuals all over the world. I talk about certain subjects like relationships, both good and bad, addiction, sexuality, and also behaviors that we as a society deem immoral. And I want to talk about all of that from a mental health perspective. Sometimes I have a guest, and I will next week when we explore the issue of homelessness, when we explore the issue of becoming homeless, or how the kinds of effects that homelessness has on an individual, and we look at it from a mental health perspective. We've certainly talked about that subject before, and I'd like to review it once again. I look forward to that conversation. Also this month, we're going to talk about all sorts of issues in regard to adoption, issues in regard to attachment and loss, bonding. It should be an interesting conversation. So sometimes I do have a guest, and sometimes I just speak from my own body of knowledge. I'm an LCSW, a licensed clinical social worker, and I've been practicing in Richmond since 1979. After I introduce any topic, I like to open the phones up to you, the listener, to ask questions, weigh in on the subject, or suggest a topic for a future show, which I always appreciate when you do that. The number at which to reach us today is 649-9737. Mental Health Matters comes to you every Thursday at 1 p.m. on WRIR 97.3 FM on your radio dial here in Richmond, Virginia. You can also listen to the program in real time by logging on to WRIR's website, www.wrir.org. This show will be available for you to listen to by this evening, along with all of my past shows, by logging onto my website and following the directions to my podcast, which I think is so cool. It's very easy to subscribe to my podcast. Just follow the easy directions on my website, and you can get to my website by going to WRIR's website or by sending me an email at yourmentalhealthmatters@gmail.com. Those are the letters U, R, and then the words Mental Health Matters, all together with no spaces, yourmentalhealthmatters@gmail.com. And I'll send you a link to my website. I'll also send you directions to my podcast, and I look forward to your thoughts, your questions, your comments, and suggestions for new shows. So today, on Mental Health Matters, I'm going to talk perhaps on a more philosophical basis. Although I don't see the conversation as philosophical, but you might. And I'm going to talk about this issue. Okay, this question: do we create our own reality, our own happiness, our own thoughts? Can we think ourselves happy? So I want to talk about that from a mental health perspective. So I actually want to proffer a little bit of mental health theory as we go through this subject today. Just want to say that if you have any questions, again, the number is 649-9737, and you're listening to Mental Health Matters. Okay, so the topic is, do we create our own reality, our own happiness, and our own thoughts? And can we think ourselves happy? So I'd like to say it's a mixed bag, so to speak. Because you know what? A lot of things affect us and affect the lives we have and affect how we feel and how we feel about our lives, how we feel about our relationships. For instance, if we have a particular crisis or a terrible loss, we may be filled with just all the chemical reaction to that kind of loss and sadness and fear and anxiety. And it's hard to capture and hold on to a thought. Matter of fact, sometimes when we are facing a crisis, we become almost numb. If we hurt ourselves, we become almost, when we hurt ourselves, the first reaction neurochemically is for your brain to create an analgesic reaction to being hurt, and it soothes that pain center until your body sort of then catches up to the pain. So in some ways, even in the face of really something really horrid, we might numb out and not have any feelings or any thoughts. But I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about on a regular, ongoing basis, do we have the ability to think ourselves happy? So let me just give you a little bit of mental health theory here, which I think is really interesting. Okay, so in the early part of the 20th century, there were a group of theorists who began to create a belief that certain things that happen to us, mental illness, anxiety, depression, even interpersonal problems, all came from faulty thinking, and that those faulty thoughts can be redirected so you can change your thinking and therefore change your feelings. Now, of course, that sounds a lot more easily said than done, but it's actually a lot more easily done than people work to do. Because we as human beings, to some extent, if not to a large extent, are somewhat lazy about our thinking habits. One thing is we might engage a belief or engage an ideology, and no matter what information we get that should have us look at the basis of fact in a different way, we cannot use the new information to change our thinking, especially if we have an entrenched ideological belief. So, and sometimes our thoughts, good, bad, or indifferent, are just comfortable because they're our thoughts and we don't really want to change them. And those of us who have a habit of thinking about something over and over again that creates anxiety for us are so used to having sort of worn out that piece of carpet in our brain. We think that thought over and over and over again. And that thought is so entrenched in our thinking that we don't even give ourselves the option to try to look at or counteract whether that thought makes any sense at all. And from that thought, we have a lot of misery. So human beings can be kind of lazy. We don't have to stay tethered to our thinking. We actually have the ability to rethink, break into our obsessive thinking patterns, change our beliefs about the world, and give up our anger, our fears. We actually have the ability to do that. We just don't. So while I don't know that it's easy enough to just wave a magic wand over your thinking so that you can only think happy thoughts, but I do know that we can work harder and ought to work harder at challenging and redirecting those thoughts that give us nothing but misery. Because most of us do not have to be miserable. We really don't. We create our own beliefs about our lives. Let me give you an example, okay? So we would all sort of throw out this, not all of us, but most of us would sort of think that if you had lots of money, you would be happier than if you didn't have enough money. So if you have lots of money, you would be happier than if you didn't have enough money. So do the statistics bear that out? Okay, so if you look at people who are so impoverished that they don't have a place to live, and they don't have enough money with which to buy food, then perhaps we're going to recognize that that person is going to be in a very marginal life position, and it is going to be harder for them to feel a sense of well-being. So let's move up from that group of people, and let's just move into perhaps the group of people who work for a living, have enough money for their house, their food, for a little vacation, for some activities, enough money to buy something new occasionally, just sort of, you know, regular straight up middle class person. So statistically, is a regular straight up middle class person, are they more happy on a regular basis than a millionaire? Or is a millionaire more happy than a regular, ordinary, middle-class person? And the answer to that question is that there's nothing that bears out the answer to that question, because we're as happy as we decide that we can be with what we have, because nobody's life is without all of those things that pull us in to misery if we choose to allow it. None of us avoid having loss. None of us avoid medical problems. None of us avoid the intricacies of intimate relationships. All of us have to manage work and relationships, our health, our spiritual lives, all of us, whether we have lots of money or if we live a very middle-class existence. So if we then get hunkered in, if we get married to the belief that we need more money in order to be happy, you can actually have that belief if you're very wealthy or if you have very little spare money at all. It's all about how you want to look at it. Because if this is your life, wouldn't you like to believe that what you have is enough? So there is a group of therapeutic thoughts that are called cognitive behavioral therapy. And the first person who began to, one of the first people to begin to write about these, this belief that we can think ourselves happier, was a theorist, a psychologist, born in the United States, named Albert Ellis. And he said that all misery boils down to three basic thoughts. And he calls them three basic musts, that all misery boils down to this must you have in your head, and that everything sort of comes in these three categories. So all misery boils down to, I must do well and win the approval of others for my performances, or else I'm no good. I must do well and win the approval of my others, or I'm just no good. Two, other people must treat me considerately. Other people must treat me considerably. I can't even speak. Considerately, that's it. Fairly and kindly. And in the exact way I want them to treat me. And if they don't, then they are no good and they deserve to be condemned and punished. Okay. So the third must is I must get what I want when I want it, and I must not get what I don't want. It's terrible if I don't get what I want. I can't stand it. So he says that all misery boils down to those three musts. And then he says that with the first belief that others, that you must do well and win the approval of others or else you're no good, that in the face of that, it leads to anxiety, depression, shame, and guilt. And the second belief that other people must treat me considerately, fairly, and kindly, and exactly the way I want them to treat me. And if they don't, they are no good, and they deserve to be condemned and punished. Now, think of how often when somebody doesn't do something the way you want them to do it, that you personalize their behavior and get very irritated and give your power away to that person. We have, and what I think undergirds that must, that piece where you believe that everybody should treat you considerately. Yes, it would be nice if everybody treated us considerately. That just doesn't happen in this world all the time. Never has, and it never will. And remind yourself that I am talking about theories that were written 100 years ago or 80 years ago, okay? So this kind of belief that everybody should, you know, we all sort of believe that it's only new now that customer service is bad or people aren't kind to us. No, people have always not been kind to each other. That's human nature. And that if we hold on to this belief that if somebody doesn't treat us exactly the way we want to, so we might go to that belief that if all of us lived by the golden rule, okay? And the golden rule is that you should do unto others as you have them do unto you. Well, that's a great rule, that you should treat others the way you want them to treat you. And you have total control over treating others the way you want them to treat you. You have zero control how other people treat you. Zero control. And if you get anchored into the belief that you should have control over how other people treat you, and that if they don't treat you the way you think they should, that you're going to give your power away to them, and in the face of that, wind up angry, rageful, doing acts of passive aggression, acts of violence. That is this brokenness we have inside of ourselves, that we respond to other people's unkindnesses by giving away all of our power rather than recognizing that their behavior is about them and not about you. Almost all the time. 99.9999% of the time. How people act is from their basis of action, not because of you. People who are short-tempered or people who don't say hello to other people in public, generally those people are short-tempered with everyone and don't care to say hello to many people. It's not about you. It's about them.
but it's about you to believe that all behavior should be judged on how you do something, because we are all very different human beings. Okay, so the third must is I must get what I want when I want it, and I must not get what I don't want, and it's terrible if I don't get what I want, and I can't stand it. Now, I have to say that's been, I think there's been an explosion of that since generationally since the 60s, I think. I think that we've become a spoiled people, and somebody crosses us, we want to sue them, we want to find blame for everything we have to manage in our own lives, rather than, and we don't want to have the frustration tolerance to not get exactly what we want. So, and it makes us miserable. It really makes us miserable, because it leads to self-pity, procrastination, because we feel powerless. Self-pity and procrastination. So that's what he wrote the three musts were. And then other people began to look at, other people began to look at a whole other set of core beliefs that that get us stuck in our own misery. And we look at these cognitive distortions that Aaron Beck wrote. And he says that when things happen, we overgeneralize. We have this, that we erroneously conclude that a single case means an ultimate truth about a situation. So I did poorly on a test, and that must mean that I will never be able, I'll never do well in school. That personalization, which I was just talking about, that the things other people do are about us, and it's just not true. That we have this thinking, it's like this dichotomous thinking, this very absolute thinking, and we divide things into extreme categories. If I get this job, I will be set for life. And if I don't get this job, I will be unemployed forever. We have a hard time extrapolating to the bigger world, which is that your life is almost never defined by a single event. But we get stuck in that thinking, and we have a really hard time letting go of it. We catastrophize. We see one small minor thing becoming the worst situation in the entire world, that it's going to create disaster. For instance, if my boyfriend breaks up with me, then I'll never find love again. We want to suck things in as personal worthlessness, specific overgeneralizations focused on personal failure. If I, have, if I don't make as much money as I had hoped to make, then I'm a failure. If I don't find love early enough, I'm a failure. And then the worst thing, which is mind reading, an assumption that an observed behavior of someone else is due to an inner knowledge of that person. That I can tell that woman doesn't want to talk to me because every time I see her, she's talking on her cell phone to avoid me. As if her talking on her cell phone has anything to do with you, and that you can read her mind and you know it's exactly about you. So again, the first thing to begin to do to believe that you have the ability to change your thinking, and to challenge those entrenched beliefs that cause you misery, that cause you anxiety, that cause you to get caught in a pity pot, that the first thing to begin to do, whether whether, and this takes energy, but it's to begin to look at the things you believe. And you know what? I'm going to put those three musts and Beck's cognitive distortions. I'm going to put those lists on my website. I challenge you to go look at those lists and begin to think about how often the negative things you think about yourself and the world fall into those categories, and how you can choose not to be entrenched in those, in that thinking. I always think about when I was when my mom would go out to dinner with me, and then she'd be telling her friend about the experience of our dinner. And my mom was just, it was just the way she was. She just was a negative person, and she'd be explaining what happened at the restaurant where I'd have just have had such a good time, and she would talk about that the service wasn't good. Or just think about how much we want to, like, you know, cue into the little nuances of misery rather than standing back and looking at a bigger picture. Just think about how much we teach our kids to do that as well. That if certain things don't go on well at school, that it's a bad school. If your teacher is a bad teacher, that you have the right not to do well. We give that to our children. That misinformation about what happens outside of us, about what meaning we can give to what happens outside of us. We can look at our experience and say, okay, well, that wasn't really fun, but the bigger picture is a lot better. Yeah, you know what? The food at that restaurant wasn't really very good, but the company was great. Now, you know, maybe we just won't choose to go there again. Or, you know, I didn't really like my first period class, but I really like the rest of my experience there. We teach our kids to make assessments about the entire well-being of their lives based on you believing that that experience should be exactly the way you want it to be. And it doesn't work. We, as adults, we need to be able to deal with what's in front of us. Life is about solving the problems. We need to be able to dust off. Life is about making most things just not that big in our lives. There's a million other experiences to have other than the one you get sucked into thinking will be miserable. I really appreciate you listening today, and I hope you'll tune in next week where we're going to talk about homelessness, about mental illness and homelessness. And I hope that you'll go and look on my website and look at these cognitive distortions and the three musts and see how those thoughts get in your way so that you can begin to create a happier life. Have a great week. This is Gail Moskowitz, and you're listening to Mental Health Matters.
Be happy. In every life we have some trouble. But when you worry, you make it double. Don't worry. Be happy. Don't worry. Be happy now.
Today's voice of recovery is Thomas Williams, who was born in 1911 in Mississippi. By age 5, he had been diagnosed with diphtheria, leaving his legs paralyzed for nearly 2 years. At the age of 13, his mother